Thank you very much for adjusting the time for me. And I'm very grateful, of course, to the organizers for giving me the opportunity to share. Yes, I come from a very small country called Singapore, and I do have some a little bit to share with you this afternoon. After hearing George, Professor Berman, I know that I need to say very little, and I'll try to keep it short, but there's no promises, as every time we promise to be short, we seem to overrun our time. So that's my problem too. So I'll try. And in Singapore, we try to keep things simple because we're a small country, and therefore we try not to do too big things. So we keep things simple. We call interim measures or provisional measures, whatever orders it is. We are, of course, from a common law jurisdiction traditionally. We therefore, in our practice in courts, we tend to follow English precedents and practices. We've heard from the Alex as well as George about the various terminology they use to describe. I would like to choose one for Singapore as simple and supportive, the two S's. So instead of being interventionists, we are pro-arbitration and fully supportive, sometimes far too supportive in some cases. In fact, there are cases in which I thought the court should intervene, but the court won't intervene. So this is the good and the bad. You've got to take it together. I would like to say very quickly that in Singapore, we allow interim measures to be obtainable from two possible sources. First, at the court of place of arbitration. Secondly, it can be a court which has personal jurisdiction over the responding party, anywhere, especially where the assets may be found. And thirdly, before the arbitral tribunal. So today I'm just going to share with you some thoughts on the various aspects that has been already covered. If there's repetition, please forgive me, because some have been covered earlier by other speakers. Interim measures, by whatever label is called, is not considered as an award under Singapore's internal law. In other words, under Singapore law, we define an award as a decision on the substantive matters between the two parties, with one exception. If it is an interim measure issued by a court outside Singapore, but from a New York Convention country, then we deem that for the purposes of enforcing that interim measure as an award, just for that purpose. So that takes care of some of George's comment earlier about what do you call them. We are puristic when it comes to what is an award in Singapore, but when it comes to enforcement, as I say, we are so pro-arbitration, we will deem it as an award for the purposes of enforcing it as a New York Convention award. And that ring fence, in a way, the problem and discussion about what is an award, what is the preliminary order, or what is the interim measure, and what is the interim award. So we sort of take care of that in simple ways. In Singapore, we have a dual regime of arbitration. We keep domestic arbitration separate from international arbitration. Domestic arbitration, we have the Domestic Arbitration Act, and that is more or less like the UK's 1996 arbitration law, where there's appeal and where there's all on question of law and the review process, and we keep it that way. But for international arbitration, we have a separate act which is formulated based on answer trial model law, except with Article 17 or Chapter 4 excluded. So we do not adopt the 2006 amendment to the answer trial model law. And that is because we had our provision on empowering tribunals to make interim measures way before Chapter 4A came about. In fact, it probably prompted answer trial and some writers to say, hey, a small country like Singapore is so proactive and gave powers to the tribunal, so much powers. In fact, we gave our tribunal the same power as a high court judge in civil proceedings. So you can see that the powers of a tribunal in Singapore is very much like a high court judge. And therefore, we do not need to adopt Chapter 4A of the answer trial model law, which actually, in our view, restricts the tribunal's power to grant interim relief. There's a lot of preconditions as to grant, whereas in Section 12 of our International Arbitration Act, we do not prescribe such issues. So, in fact, if we read Section 12, it gives the tribunal the power to order security for cause, discovery, evidence by affidavit, preservation orders, taking of samples, taking experiment, preservation of subject matter in dispute, securing an amount dispute, which is an expansion actually of simply securing a value or securing money that is in dispute, ensuring that award is not rendered nugatory by dissipation of assets, Mariva injunction or freezing orders that they have in England is also preserved within this in this section. An interim injunction or any other interim measure. So the gate is open wide for arbitral tribunal in its own creative manner or power to find interim measure supportive of the arbitration. So this is how we have done it in Singapore in terms of granting the tribunal the power to grant relief. Similarly, the court too has power to grant interim relief or interim measure, but the court's power in a sense also is circumscribed by the power of the arbitral tribunal. In the sense that what the court is given is the same power as if it is the arbitral tribunal. Except that the court's power to grant order can subsequently be altered by the arbitral tribunal. In other words, also taking care of George's observation, is there not a tension between the tribunal's decision on interim, a court's decision on interim measure, and that, and if will the arbitral tribunal be amenable to it? The answer to that is very easy, because in Singapore, we give the priority or the preemptive power to the tribunal. So a court may make an interim measure, but is always subject to it being altered, denied, set aside, whatever you call it, when the tribunal is formed. The tribunal has the last say when it comes to interim measure. So that's how we deal with it. As I say, very simple. There are some cases when we have, about 12 years ago, when we had an issue with courts, parties going to court for interim measure, the question has arisen is, should Singapore courts order interim measure only in support of arbitration seated in Singapore? One court says, yes, because we should not be an international busybody. We should be pro-Singapore arbitration. I had a problem with that, and I wrote an article criticizing it. I say, we should be an international busybody when it comes to being pro-arbitration. If we proclaim ourselves to be pro-arbitration, we cannot be parochial and say it's pro-Singapore arbitration. So that was my criticism, and subsequently, the Court of Appeal caught that, and they made some comment on it. Even so, even better, we amended our law shortly after that to say that an arbitral tribunal, or a court in Singapore, irrespective of where the place of arbitration is, may make an interim measure in support of arbitration. I think the word here is crucial, is in support of arbitration, but it's prevented from intervening with arbitration. Intervention and support are two different terms that the court often use in Singapore. We have a few cases in which they came to the court where certain measures have been asked for example, a positive injunction. Something like a relief as part of the substantive relief that is being claimed. One example is a case called NCC against Allianz Concrete Singapore, where in Singapore during those days in mid-2000, we had a problem of sand. You know, Singapore is a big country, yeah? We don't have mountains, we don't have deserts, we have the highest point is 600 feet, which is 250 meters. And we really don't have anything. So even when we build our buildings, we need to import sand. And where does the sand come from? Malaysia, Indonesia, Myanmar, Vietnam. But most of our sand would have come from Indonesia, and there was a ban on sand. Malaysia, good friends of ours, Indonesia, good friends of ours, we're all ASEAN brothers, but for some reason, they say, no more sand for Singapore. And so the guys who supply pre-mixed concrete, had a contract with this contractor, NCC International, were stuck with a situation where they could not supply the concrete. Without sand, you have only cement, you cannot supply the pre-mixed concrete. So they then went to court, there's an arbitration clause, they went to court for an order to ask the court to order that they continue to supply the concrete. And the court said, how could we do that? It's a positive injunction. And if it could be a relief, a substantive relief, that could be sought only from the tribunal. It is not, you'll be intervening with the courts, with the tribunal's ruling or right to grant relief to make it such an order. So the relief was refused. So it is, again, a positive injunction. First example. Second example here is even more exciting. Maldives Airport Company against GMR, Malay International Airport, a case in which the Maldives actually granted GMR a contract to a concession to operate the airport, to build, operate, and they also leased the airport land. There were a new government came in, there's a change of government, they increased tariffs, and as well as they prevent them from collecting the increased tariff from the passengers and from the airline. As a result, GMR was not happy with it, and they refused to do so. They wanted to collect the tariff, the money from the airline and the passengers, and the government took over the airport and ran it for a while. They commenced up. They wanted, of course, there's an arbitration clause, and GMR came to Singapore and asked the Singapore court for an injunction to ask the Maldivian government to return the operation of the airport to them. Here again, of course, the question of what is the status quo ante? What is the status quo ante? Should it be GMR continue to operate? Or now that the government has already taken over, should we ask the government to leave and then GMR to return? So these are real serious practical questions. The court in this particular case, of course, reasoned it very simply by saying the balance of convenience lies with the government operating the airport and avoid the question of what is the status quo ante. Of course, there's a claim, of course, that they were proprietary rights. They were lessees to the land for a number of years, 50 years or 30 years, I'm not sure. But those are substantive questions. Again, the court say it is for the tribunal to decide, and the court should not be involved in that decision. This was, again, a positive injunction, refused. So quite clearly, while the court is prepared, while Singapore courts are prepared to give supportive preliminary or provisional relief or measures in support of arbitration, is quite prepared not to do so if this a positive injunction requiring a specific party to do acts that which will probably come within the tribunal's power of relief eventually. I'll skip this, a situation in which the asset is outside jurisdiction. Will the court still grant? In this particular case, the court granted the relief, even though the asset is not in jurisdiction, except that in this particular case also, both parties before the court were quite interested to have the court making the order. So it is not a very exciting case. Apart from the courts, of course, I mentioned earlier, the tribunal in Singapore has also been given powers to grant interim relief. And a lot of, prior to the SEAC coming into being, very much an ad hoc arbitration regime. But since SEAC came into being in 1991 and in 2004, it became, 2004 onwards, became a fully administered arbitration. We are very much like the ICC. In fact, we see ICC as the premium brand in our international arbitration, and we followed many of their styles. And Professor Tessier is here. I think we worked together in those days, and we learned very much from the ICC. Under the rules of institutions, they have also been given specific powers to do so. And in more recent years, and I think we've heard it earlier, the concept of emergency arbitrator came about. Emergency arbitrator is to cover a situation where arbitration may have been commenced or may not have been commenced, or parties are intending to commence arbitration, but before the arbitral tribunal is constituted, you need, during that window, an authority or a person or a body to make interim measures, to grant interim measures before the tribunal has been constituted. You can go to court. But here is the situation, is institutions provide emergency arbitrator just for the purpose of granting that relief. The role of the emergency arbitrator ends when the tribunal is constituted. So its life just expires. Of course, an emergency arbitrator is a misnomer. It is not an arbitrator. It decides nothing between the parties except to grant the relief or not to grant the relief. So its role is actually quite simple. Is it good to grant or not to grant. Of course, the same principles of balance and convenience, whether or not there's an arguable case, whether or not it's reparable or irreparable damage may be caused, all these will be considered by the emergency arbitrator, whose role is to make the relief pending the constitution of the tribunal. So once the tribunal comes into being, the tribunal itself can decide to continue the interim measure or to to revoke the order by the, made by the by the emergency arbitrator. So these are measures that these are all provided for in the CIAC rules, and they have been very popular. The emergency arbitral procedure has been very popular. There's about last year 17 cases, and to date I think there's about 80 to 90 cases since its implementation. So it's been very popular, and I believe that these numbers are quite respectable in terms of emergency arbitrator, and gave CIAC a lot of mileage in this area. I want to say, of course, also that orders of interim measure, I said earlier, are not considered awards, because we define awards as decisions that are final and binding in nature, and therefore awards cannot be revisited. The decisions cannot be revisited. So interim measures ordered by Singapore Tribunal or Singapore courts are all interim measures, all provisional measures. They are not awards. With the other exception, I'll come to it in a while. And therefore, interim measures not being award are therefore not appealable, and therefore cannot review for setting aside under Article 34 of model law. So it will, the whole concept is that when an arbitration is commenced, the court will be supportive and will not intervene in the arbitration, even if it feels that the interim measure ordered by the tribunal is not proper. The court should not intervene, because the court will allow it to go through and will intervene only at the setting aside of the award, not in the intervening process. So interim measures in Singapore are not appealable, not available, reviewable under any other under the Article 34 of model law. And I said earlier, there's a special provisions under 12A of our model law, of our International Arbitration Act, that an order of court made by a judge for interim measure may be reviewed, may be annulled or revoked by the tribunal itself when once it's constituted. So question is, during the course of an arbitration, could you go to the court for interim relief? The question is yes. Before you can, during you can. But even, why would parties go to the court for interim relief when there's a tribunal? It's possible because sometimes tribunal may be in all different jurisdictions. It's very difficult for them to assemble. It may be difficult for them to make a very immediate order. And for exigencies, sometimes you go to court. And the court may still grant interim relief during the pendency of the arbitration, leaving it finally to the tribunal to review it, whether to continue the measure granted. I mentioned earlier, the only exception is interim measure from issued by New York contracting states that are sought to be enforced in Singapore. We create an exception under the new Section 27, which defines an order or direction made or given by an arbitral tribunal in course of an arbitration in respect of any matter set out in Section 12. In other words, so long as it's a matter that a Singapore arbitral tribunal can grant as an interim measure, that measure will be considered as enforceable in Singapore as if it's an award for that purpose, and only for that purpose. Yeah? We have also measures in aid of enforcement of award. Singapore courts see as a duty to enforce awards. So if you are an award winner, come to Singapore, they will enforce it. If you are an award loser, don't keep your assets in Singapore. Yeah? You have only darkness in your life, no daylight. Yeah? And the court have all consistently held that it has power to issue injunctions or relief in aid of enforcement. So again, supportive measure, not preventive. Singapore courts have made decisions that it will not grant anti-arbitration injunction. In fact, there's a decision that it prevents it. Article 5 prevents it from granting of model law, preventing it from granting anti-arbitration injunction, because there's nothing in model law that empowers the court to make such an order. And as such, only anti-suit injunction may be granted, but not anti-arbitration injunction. So that's how extreme we have got. Only very recently, however, There's a very recent case that just came out before I left for Singapore. It's a case called Sun Travels Hilton International, where it's a dispute between the Hilton and the owner of the hotel called Sun Travels. Arbitration was in Singapore, and the award was made in favor of Hilton. Hilton sought enforcement in Maldives. However, there's confusion in the Maldivian courts. They went first to the court of what they call large claims, and the court of large claims said, no, we are not the proper court. You should seek enforcement in the court of enforcement. They have a court of enforcement, which is an intermediate court. When the court of enforcement said, no, we're the wrong court. You should go to the high court. But the high court said, no, we are not the proper court. It should be the court of the civil, the first court, it says, where where Hilton sought. Meanwhile, Sun Travels commenced court action, litigation, on the same claim, and that claim was entertained by the Maldivian courts. They filed it in August 2016. They got obtained a judgment by March 2016. Meanwhile, the appeal process on enforcement got up and down and was not decided. And finally, when the Hilton went to the correct court this time for enforcement, judgment on the by Sun Travel, by the Maldivian court, came about. In other words, the Maldivian court issued a judgment upholding its jurisdiction and make a ruling on substantive dispute between the parties. In other words, there's a conflict between the court judgment and a tribunal's award. So the enforcement court this time said, yes, we have jurisdiction, but we cannot enforce it because it conflicts against a judgment of our courts. And so that is the story of Hilton. Hilton went back to Singapore and asked for an anti-suit injunction. I don't know why. After all this whole circle, he went back to Singapore for an anti-suit injunction. The Singapore court was very kind. High court granted the anti-suit injunction. But the court of appeal this time was a little bit more cautious. Because Maldives is not far from Singapore. In fact, we had a very close relationship with them. But the court, while making some comments on the way the judgment was entered, was very respectful of the Maldivian courts. He says that the Hilton should have come earlier for an anti-suit injunction. It's far too late in the day, you know, where the judgment is entered and that judgment is being appealed against for this court to issue an anti-suit injunction against the court, against a party from pursuing its appeal or defending the appeal. So while the High Court made the injunction, the Court of Appeal set aside injunction, but the Court of Appeal did something. The Court of Appeal declared that the award that's made in ICC here in Singapore was binding and final, and that what was done by the Sun Travels in this case was in breach of the arbitration agreement. It made a declaratory relief, but set aside the injunction. We don't know what will happen to the matter in the Maldivian Court of Appeal. We'll have to see. Watch this space. It's interesting. So it is measures in aid of enforcement. Nevertheless, while the court did not, court appeal refused injunction, the court appeal did grant a declaration to the effect. Hopefully, to suggest to the court appeal in my lives that they should not have granted the judgment. And hopefully, they'll reverse that decision in Maldives. And that is what the Singapore court did. Because to grant an injunction at that stage will be an affront to the Maldivian courts. We have also in our region, India, for example, has for many years been seen to be not very pro-arbitration, but in recent years there is a sea change in India. They have been very proactive and been very pro-arbitration over the last 5 years. Yeah, they have changed, amended their legislation. They've also empowered in Section 9 of the Conciliation Arbitration Act 1996, there are three 1996 Acts. It's not just the English Act, the Indian Act, the New Zealand Act, and the UK Act. They're all arbitration laws of 1996. So here is a case in which they actually enforce and grant an interim measure and detain a helicopter owned by ONGC, Oil and Gas, Natural Gas Corporation of India, a state-owned company. So they are actually very pro-arbitration, at the moment at least. Last slide and last thing I want to share with you is a recent development between Hong Kong and China. I know my role is talk about Singapore, but Singapore perspective means how I see the world from Singapore. So I see the world, Singapore's world is, if we limit it to Singapore, it's very small. So Singapore looked beyond our shores. We looked to Malaysia, India, and China. Frankly, Indonesia is a very important jurisdiction. Yeah, it's got 200 million people and has got spawned a lot of disputes as well. Okay, it's good for Singapore. In Hong Kong and China, Hong Kong we always see itself as see Singapore as a rival and all, but we don't see it that way. Yeah, we see we have different markets. Yeah, Hong Kong's influence mainly on the southern part of China. We believe our influence is further inland. We don't look at Shanghai and Beijing and Guangzhou. We look further inland. We'll go for the second and third tier cities. We look at the Zhejiang area. We look at Xinjiang area. We look at the inner Mongolia area. You know, so we are different. Yeah, we have different markets. And but what's interesting in Hong Kong, in China, is that Chinese arbitral institutions and the arbitral tribunal itself cannot issue provisional measures. Only the courts can. So so if you have arbitration in China, that is what you have to live with. You know, good and bad, I'm not sure, but that's the current situation. What is what happened recently in Hong Kong is a very positive thing for Hong Kong, and that is there's a special arrangement between Hong Kong and China where if you have an arbitration in Hong Kong, it's possible now to go to a Chinese courts to obtain provisional relief in Chinese courts. That is assuming that the assets of the respondent in China. So if you have an arbitration based in Hong Kong and the other party is a Chinese party, you may go to a Chinese court to obtain interim measure, and although the seat of arbitration is in Hong Kong. So this is a special arrangement that has been entered into for purposes of Hong Kong only. I hope China will. China and Singapore has very close cooperation as well. We have a judicial cooperation agreement with them, but we do not have this particular aspect. We'll work at it. That's all I have to say. And let me just say that, if I may say that, confidentiality, yes. Confidentiality in international arbitration as well as interim measures. Question of, is it better to go to court or go to arbitration? I'll go to the arbitral tribunal for interim relief. The answer for Singapore, it's the same. It doesn't matter because confidentiality is not prejudiced. It's not compromised under Singapore law. We have to keep the files closed for 10 years. And more recently, in fact, just yesterday, I saw an ICC letter. Anyone from ICC here? I think they have a new provision that allows awards to be published after 2 years. So this is something new, yeah? Unless party expressly agree not to. So it's something new that I didn't realize. This is a more recent award which we issued yesterday. And I got this letter from ICC saying that please be warned, that beware that ICC awards will be published unredacted, unanonymized, 2 years, unless you say so, unless parties request and agree to do so. So confidentiality is soon becoming not as important. If ICC does that, and if more institutions launch into that, then our confidentiality might no longer be an issue and for many people. I hope I have not overstayed my time. Thank you very much.